Blog Talk Radio.
A lot of bad habits. A lot of bad habits. And welcome to another Norm at Night. I'm coming to you here live from Cat Harpin, Virginia. A lot of stuff to talk about tonight. Well, actually not that much, but we're going to have a lot of fun talking about it. If you want to get in on this, we're barely a minute old. You can give me a call at 347-945-6713, and I will try to get you on the air with Norm at Night. I do want to talk about Olympia Snowe and her big vote in the United States Senate today. It makes me feel a whole lot better now about health care, though I'm hoping that my buddy Pelosi can bring the single-paid public option back, which the sellout list from a few weeks ago knocked out of the Senate bill. But if we can get it in the House bill, at least it'll then be on the table at the conference, and we may be able to get it back anyway. I guess the filibuster problems are over because it's pretty clear that the Dems should have no trouble now with Olympia Snowe on their side. So what do you think about what Olympia Snowe did today? Obviously, I wasn't going to tell you what I thought about it, but I think it's pretty clear from the last things I've said. So what about Olympia Snowe? Did she do the right thing? It's, I like blew my cork about Bacchus and the boys last week or 2 weeks ago when they deserted us on the single-pay Schumer amendment. And, I can't even think of the other guy whose amendment was defeated. It really doesn't matter. The question now is Olympia Snowe, 347-945-6713. Get on the air with Norm at Night and give me an idea of what you think about Olympia Snowe. All you listeners out there, if anybody is listening, when people call in about Olympia Snowe, call in about them. Let's get some dialogue going. This is really peachy creamy weather. Peachy creamy weather for dialogue. Little bit of autumn in the air today out here in Virginia and back in Maryland when I was there over the weekend. It was indeed chilly, almost cold. I mean, this morning when I was parking the car, talking to the bus guys, gosh, you could see your breath. Unbelievable. Here we are, October, and you can see your breath. Somebody out there listening where it's snowing, give us a call, 347-945-6713. Oh, everybody knows I grew up in Buffalo. Every once in a while, you get a snowstorm in October, and when it comes, it is a dilly bar. I remember one right after I got back out of the Navy. I got home back to Buffalo, was going to graduate school at the State University, just taking some courses in East European history and in philosophy. And sure enough, the middle of October, a foot snowstorm. I guess that would have been 1974, actually. Yes, it was. Oh, man, 24 foot loose and fancy free. Oh, gosh, yes. Oh, to be 24 again. No, actually, I don't know. I don't know if I could take it, actually. But anyway, let's talk some about Olympia Snow. 347-945-6713. The other thing I want to talk about tonight is the whole idea of Nobel Prizes, especially Nobel Peace Prizes. I'm not sure that given an American president who is Commander-in-Chief of the Army, a Nobel Peace Prize was anything, I don't even know. Anyway, I'm looking at an article here on Google, Decline and Fall of the Nobel Peace Prize. I got to look at this here. It's from the Jerusalem Post. Oh, this should be a dilly bar. From the Jerusalem Post, and I quote, folks, Albert Nobel must be spinning in his grave. How could five Norwegians have so screwed up his great prize? I grew up in awe of the Nobel and its Nobel recipients. The award was an acknowledgement on the part of our civilization that peace is humanity's greatest goal. I read books about the prize and its recipients. I gave my kids quizzes on the winners. I went so far as to establish an annual lecture at Oxford University that could only be delivered by Nobel laureates. Endowed during the 1990s by philanthropist Edmund Safra, the lecture was delivered to capacity audiences by such luminaries as Elie Wiesel, winner in 1986, Joseph Rotblat, winner in 1995, Shimon Peres and Yitzhak Rabin, winners in 1994, and most significantly, Mikhail Gorbachev, winner in 1990. I used to wait expectantly for the Friday morning in October when the Peace Prize was announced. As a teenager, when I dreamed of what achievements my life might bring, the Nobel Peace Prize was at the top of the list, even ahead of the presidency of the United States. But what a drag the past few years have been. For me, it began when the prize was awarded in 1994 to Yasser Arafat, the godfather of modern terrorism, whose lasting legacy is the army of suicide bombers he launched against the Jewish state to dismember pregnant women and disembowel helpless children. That such a cold-blooded killer could win the world's highest award for peace turned the prize into a farce. At Oxford, I hosted Kari Christensen, who bravely resigned from the Nobel Peace Committee as a result of the Arafat debacle. But one bad apple, I said to myself, could not ruin a prize so and its ambition and scope. But then more strange choices followed. Strange not because the recipients lacked virtue, but because their achievements had so little to do with peace. The whole purpose of the prize is to promote peace as humanity's most noble objective. So what did that have to do with Al Gore and climate change, important as the issue is? And why award the prize to Jimmy Carter, whose legacy is not peace between nations, but an almost irrational penchant for championing strong-arm dictators at the expense of their oppressed people, including praise offered for such international criminals as Kim Il-sung, Marshal Josef Tito, Nicholas Sersesu, and Rael Cedras. Indeed, after the prize was awarded to Mohammed El-Baradei in 2005, it seemed that it simply become a tool with which to bash the Bush administration. In light of these developments, the night before the prize's announcement last week, I told a friend I'll bet President Obama would receive it. My friend was incredulous, but he hasn't done anything. To be honest, yes, but he's not President Bush. To be honest, even as I said it, I didn't completely believe it. Surely the members of the Nobel Peace Committee did not hate Bush enough to destroy their prize by using it as a stick yet again. But the next morning, the unthinkable happened. A man in office only 9 months, who had not resolved a single global conflict, and who has yet to disarm the Iranian nuclear menace, won the prize. Don't get me wrong, I'm not an Obama basher. Our president is a man of rare eloquence. I supported him through the good he has done and criticized him for the missteps I think he has taken. But come on. Peace is not simply a great speech, and universal harmony is not merely a collection of words. Martin Luther King was arguably the finest American orator of the 20th century. But he won the 1964 prize for his marches rather than his words. It was his courageous action throughout the American South, defying attack dogs, powerful water hoses, and determined assassins that earned him the prize. It was the change he brought to ending segregation and Jim Crow that made him a global hero of peace. Indeed, the speech gave accepting the prize in Oslo is considered to have been among his most lackluster addresses, appropriate perhaps in highlighting that it was what he did rather than what he said that matters. And this is where the real guilt of a Nobel Committee lies. They have conveyed the mistaken message that what a man or woman says is as important as what they do. While we need eloquent words to make us march, until those feet start stomping, the speeches remain empty rhetoric. No doubt our president is given some time. He might have earned the prize outright based on real achievements, confronting Iran, shoring up Afghanistan's fledgling democracy, and perhaps even disarming North Korea. He might have earned the prize by bringing an end to some of the 30-odd civil wars in Africa where so much of his family still lives. But this prize will now be seen for what it has sadly become, a political statement against Republican U.S. governments. I'm neither a Republican nor a Democrat, preferring to utilize my God-given intelligence to choose my own position on the issues. But my value system comes from Judaism, which has always promoted peace as life's supreme goal. Indeed, our religion says one of God's name is Shalom, peace. The president should, of course, accept the prize. Not his fault that the committee awarded him something he's not yet earned, but it would be noble if he utilized his speech in Oslo to tell the world that when it comes to people dying and cities being pulverized, words are never enough. Condemning the darkness is not the same as saving the dying, and repudiating the aggressors will never protect the innocent. The writer, founder of This World, The Values Network, has just published The Blessing of Enough and the Michael Jackson Tapes. So what do you think of that? What do you think of that piece by Shumli Botich? What do you think? Somebody give me a call. 347-945-6713. Let me see if I can get in the chat room now. There we go. I guess you got to wait for the radio station to come on before you can. There's nobody in the chat room either. Remember, if you want to chat with Norm at night, it's 347-945-6713. Okay. So what did you think of the editorial from the Jerusalem Post I just wrote? What do you think of Barack Obama getting the Peace Prize? You know what? Let's go see. Oh, boy. I'm kind of pooped today, but the Senate moving forward on health care, it's really getting closer. If only we could get a real bill now. I mean, I'd feel really pretty good about everything. Oh, let's see what's on the front page of the Washington Post at the moment. It was a big piece about Olympia Snow there, Dad. There she is. So what do you think? Did she do the right thing breaking from the party? This could be the big day. We could be moving towards healthcare. It seems everything here. You know, let's go see what Eugene Robinson has to say. I don't know if anybody's been watching Eugene Robinson, but I guess I can understand that. I think he's lost all objectivity about the president. It would be me going gaga over an Italian president. I might, actually, so I guess I can understand it. But let's see what... I got so many emails. How many email addresses do you all have? I got so many, I never remember which one to sign in with. Ah, there we go. There we go. Let me see if I got any callers here. Oh, I keep hitting Skype. I want to hit this. Let me go to the... still no callers. I got five lines open. 347-945-6713. Oh, boy. Oh, here we go. Here's Eugene Robinson. Today from the Washington Post, Tuesday, October the 13th. And I quote, somebody explain this to me. The president of the United States wins the Nobel Peace Prize and Rush Limbaugh joins with the Taliban in bitterly denouncing the award. Glenn Beck has a conniption fit and demands that the president not accept what may be the world's most prestigious honor. The Republican National Committee issues a statement sarcastically mocking our nation's leader, elected, you will recall, by a healthy majority, as unworthy of such recognition. Why, oh, why do conservatives hate America so? Okay, I know it's just some conservatives who've been exhibiting what they, in a different context, surely would describe as Hanoi Jane behavior. Others who haven't taken leave of their political senses and are familiar with the concept of manners respond to President Obama's unexpected award with equanimity and even grace. Senator John McCain, for example, offered his good-natured congratulations. Some of Obama's most strident critics, however, just can't give it a rest. They use words like farce and travesty, if there was always universal agreement on the worthiness of the Nobel Peace Laureate. Does anyone remember the controversy over Henry Kissinger or Yasser Arafat or F.W. de Klerk? The problem for the addle-brained Obama rejectionist is that the president, as far as they are concerned, couldn't possibly do anything right. And thus it is unworthy of any conceivable recognition. If Obama ended world hunger, they'd accuse him of promoting obesity. If he solved global warming, they'd complain it was getting chilly. If he got Mohammed Abbas and Benjamin Netanyahu to join him around the campfire in a chorus of Kumbaya, the rejectionist would claim that his singing was out of tune. Let the rejectionist fulminate and sputter until they wear out their vocal cords. Politically, they're only bashing themselves. As Republican leaders, except NRC Chairman Michael Steele, are beginning to realize, I'm with the Taliban against America. It's not likely to be a winning slogan. More interesting, but no less goofy, is the recommendation by otherwise same commentators Obama should decline the award. This is ridiculous. If the award just represented the political views of a handful of left-leaning, self-satisfied Norwegian bureaucrats, as some critics have charged, then it wouldn't matter whether Obama had won it or not. But of course, it means much more. The Nobel Peace Prize, irrespective of the idiosyncratic process that selects its winner, is usually recognized as the stamp of the world's approval. For an American president to reject such a token of approval would be absurdly counterproductive. Obama has shifted U.S. foreign policy away from George Bush's cowboy ethos towards a multilateral approach. He envisions and has begun to implement a different kind of U.S. leadership that I believe is more likely to succeed in an interconnected multipolar world. That this shift is being noticed and recognized is to Obama's credit and to our country. The Peace Prize comes as Obama is reviewing war strategy in Afghanistan. Some advocates for sending additional troops are complaining, and some advocates of a pullout are hoping that the award may somehow limit the president's options. But the prize is nothing more than an acknowledgement of what Obama has been saying and doing thus far. He needs to be reminded of his philosophy of international relations, or that he once called Afghanistan a war of necessity. Threading that needle is not made any easier or harder by Norwegian Nobel Committee's decision. What I really don't understand is the view that somehow there's a tremendous downside for Obama in the award. It raises expectations, these commentators say, as if expectations of any American president, and especially this one, are not already sky high. Obama has taken on the rescue of the U.S. financial system and the long-term restructuring of the economy. He has launched historic initiatives to revolutionize health care, energy policy, and the way we educate our children. He said flatly during the campaign that he wants to be remembered as a transformational president. The only reasonable response is McCain's. Congratulations. Nothing, not even the Nobel Peace Prize, can set the bar any higher for President Obama than he has already set it for himself. So what do you think about what Gene Robinson has to say? What do you think about this President of the United States? And I don't want to talk about the Peace Prize. Here's a guy who came to office promising to end two wars. We're fighting them both. I don't care if you're black or white. When you say you're going to end two wars, and you come to office, and you want a primary saying that, by God, you better end the two wars. I don't care if you're white, black, purple, or yellow. If you say you're going to do something and you don't do it, you've got a problem. You can get all the peace prizes you want, but if you come to office promising that you're going to end the war, by God, end it. It's real easy to be a state senator in Illinois and be against the war and tell everybody how you were against the war. Now that you're in a position to end the war, and that's why he got my vote, because he said he was going to do it. Why aren't you ending it? Afghanistan is not a war of necessity. It's not a war of necessity. And it's becoming increasingly clear that not one more American, at least increasingly clear to me, should die. It is the place where empires go to die. And maybe it's where the American empire will go to die. Got the British. Got the Russians. And who knows, maybe he'll get us. What do you think? Is Afghanistan going to be the place where we get it? 347-945-6713. I'm 25 minutes into the show, and I haven't heard so much as a peep from anybody. I don't know. I guess maybe trying to go into see if anybody's in the hey, Colt, I see you're in the chat room. I hope you come online here. Somehow I got all wound up on this Peace Prize and forgot about all of the stuff that went on today in the Senate. I mean, that's a big deal. I mean, that is a real big deal. Olympia Snowe is on our side. Well, it's on the Democratic side right now. That means there's not going to be any filibuster. Hey, go ahead, 703, you're on.
Hey, Norm, it's from the great state of Northern Virginia. It's your cousin. I'm all confused, you know. You're saying Obama doesn't deserve the Peace Prize, and you're saying he's not successful in ending the two wars. I don't know what you have against Barack, and I don't know about you, but I support him.
I don't have anything against Barack.
You're bashing right and left, you know. When the going's good, he's all great, and things are tough, you kind of switch sides.
It's like they used to say, hey, Barack, you know, it's real easy to be against the war when you're a little nobody. And, you know, go beat my girl Hillary, saying all that stuff. Now when you're in power, when you can pick up the phone, when you can tell the general, pack up and come home, because you're commander-in-chief, it's time to do it.
He supports our men and women. I'm glad he's American enough. He's American enough to support the men and women over there who will stand so that you can have your so-called talk radio.
Don't you dare climb up on your high horse
tonight because of men and women protecting us.
No, they're not overseas protecting anything, but poppy growers.
Defending American freedoms and things that we
they
own.
Are not.
Trying
they
to
are
democracy
not.
Abroad and I just don't know. I go to crack a Jenny Cream Ale and I come back. I don't know what to think about what you're coming up with.
Hey, all I know is what I'm getting worried about is I want to see Barack Obama. I got to look to the right. That's staring me.
Nah, I don't think so.
I got to look way to the right. He's over there.
If
he's a blue dog Democrat. Hey, hold on. Go ahead, Colt. We got you on. Just butt right in here. Colt, are you there?
Yeah, I'm there. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you.
Norm,
okay.
Cole and I are the only two callers. You got to get some new life on the show. How about offering, free buffalo wings or a trip to Charlie the Butcher? I'm worried. Cole and I was the same people last time.
Well, you know, I know. There's a lot of people. There's a lot of people just listening, you know. What can I say? Hey, somebody out there, call in so I can take this Northern Virginia pretend Democrat.
Oh, you cut me to the quick. Pretend Democrat. I mean, I guess I hate to hear it go after Barack like that, you know, the commander-in-chief.
Norm thought he was getting an anti-war candidate, and it didn't quite work out. And it wouldn't have worked out with Hillary either.
What do you hear when you're taking things down to the recycling? You still have to talk to those old bums. I hope they're not troubling those poor Americans out of work. They're not.
No, I'm just gonna throw my cans in the garbage. I said to hell with it. No more bums. No more recycling.
Hey, you know, I'm driving down New York Avenue yesterday, on the way back to. I guess you call this Northern Virginia. It's got to be pretty close to Central Virginia when you're only a few miles from Charlottesville. But anyway, I'm driving down New York Avenue, you know. It's something I don't know what to do, because there's this guy, he's got no legs, and he's got his thing. And so I rolled down my window, I gave him $10.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm thinking to myself, you know, this isn't going to do anything. There's nothing I can do. So what are we going to do about? And then I see today, and the another thing. Maybe I should get a little excited. Olympia Snow decides she's going to cast her vote with the Dems on the committee today. But there's still no public option. There's still no way that guy on. There's still no single pay.
The journey begins. The steps begin with one step. It's coming. It's coming. Change is gonna come. You gotta have faith.
There's
you gotta believe. You gotta walk the walk and talk the talk. There was an old guy. Maybe you heard Bob Dylan. You know. And you
hey, it's not me. Hey. I'm not on the single.
Where's your
soul? I'm not on the single payer
dole.
I'm not on the single payer dole. It's all those government workers who are on the single payer dole.
Absolutely. And
let's not forget those unions.
And when COBRA is made available for people, it is a good thing. And you know, and you look at health care.
I don't think, absolutely. And the next thing they have to do, once there is health care coverage for all of the people, the next thing they have to do then is clamp down on all these thieves in the health care business.
There you go. Well, I got to sign off. So I'll hear from you next week.
Hey, well, thanks for the call. We'll see you next week. I got
I hope you're going to announce in the queue you got a family member running in the D.C. Marathon. You're going to have to cheer them on when they come out here. Your brother for your
Hey, do you know,
yeah.
actually, before you, my a very close relative of mine ran in the Army 10-miler. And I was real excited for him. And you can go look up his name if you want to find out his time.
Fantastic. You got quite the family of runners.
Oh, not me. I'd have to roll.
Well,
I've hit a new high.
I'm with you. Somebody on the sideline steering him on.
That's right. Well, hey, look.
I'll get to the next caller in the queue.
Hey, thanks very much for calling, 703. We'll see you next week, I hope.
All right.
Bye-bye. Hey, Colt, how are you?
Oh, pretty good. We got a storm. Storm just blew in. Well, we got a little. Oh, it's calmed down, but it's coming back again.
Hey. Oh, this is
winds and rain, all that good shit.
Hey, wait. I just got an old friend in the joining into the queue. He's a money changer.
Oh.
He's a big time. He's a big time finance guy, right out of UPenn, and he's listening to us. Join in the conversation there. 347-945-6713. Would love to hear from you.
Yeah.
But anyway,
money changer, you'll get thrown out of the temple again.
Oh, Constantine's temple, yeah. But anyway, no, seriously, oh my God, not only is the moneylender showing up, he's in the office still working, trying to earn one of those bonuses, I'll bet. No, actually, this guy,
they're never satisfied. They never have enough money, you know.
I don't know. Do you have enough money there? We'll just call you the money changer. You have enough money there? But seriously, this guy is probably one of the brightest people that I had the pleasure of teaching. And I was really kind of sad. I just, oh, my God, the 100th birthday of the school I used to teach at was this weekend. Let's just call it Hogwarts but they had this party. I have never in my life been at a party like this. I have never seen anything like this. the opulence was almost sickening. It was like putting sugar in your mouth by the tablespoon. There was anything you could think of. Anytime you turned around, there was somebody there with a new plate of food. Okay. They had this thing. Oh, this party was absolutely unbelievable. There had to be 2,000 people. And most of them were at $100 a head. And at this party, if it cost a penny, it cost $250,000. There's this massive new building that, well, there's a lot of different feelings about the building. I personally, in many ways, am awed by it. I don't know if I quite like it, but I'm definitely awed by it. And I found the computer, what they call the computer lab. And I looked in it and I thought, well, what, does everybody have to bring their own computers to this lab? But then I realized that these long tables actually had, well, I don't know what you'd call it, but you could see that there was like a cut in the computers. You pressed a button and the computers came up out of the desk.
Ooh.
I mean, it was in every room. Was just, it was like something out of Atlas Shrugged. I swear, it was like Rourke. It was like Rourke himself designed this building. Amazing, an amazing party. I was really so glad they invited me. I saw so many old students, and so that was real. That was a lot of fun. I mean, I really did enjoy it. My wife even went. She doesn't usually go anywhere with because she thinks I'm a flaming radical.
Oh, okay.
Well, she's right.
Well, okay.
But this party was really something. Hey, if you're out there, 347-945-6713, give us a call here and join in on the question of whether or not Barack Obama should have got the Peace Prize. If you're a Republican, actually, if you're a Democrat, what do you think about Olympia Snow joining the party today? Coming
well,
with the Democrat.
She was going to do that anyway.
Yeah, but she voted against public single payer. That's
well,
really starting to...
That's, it's one element of the bill. Well, what I found interesting, that maybe they've kept it under wraps for quite a while, but over the last week we're finding out that whatever is passed will not kick in for another 3 years, that it's 2013 before any of this will happen.
Well,
In the meantime,
maybe all the people will die.
They're going to tax. Well, they're going to tax everybody for the next 3 years to get the capital to launch this thing. So that means whether you're a pharmaceutical or an HMO or a small businessman, whoever you are, within the tax, I think. Almost anybody involved in healthcare is going to be paying into this thing. So they'll be taxed for 3 years before anything even happens. So what it means, too, is that anyone who's, you know, we know unemployment is going to get worse, significantly worse, and
you know,
more and more people will be without insurance over these 3 years.
So then what happens when the 3 years are up?
Well, when the 3 years are up, they will launch...
I think I'll be on Medicare when the 3 years are up.
Yeah, well, there'll be an exchange. The exchange will be out there where you can shop. And the tax credits will come into effect. And then after... after that, whatever other features they have will also be in there. You know, from what I've seen of this bill, they've added so many, you know, features. You know, the small stuff like the counseling for death, your end of life counseling, and that's peripheral. It has nothing to do with the basic plan. You know, and that's why you've got a 1,000 page document.
Well, you know what?
In there.
Yeah, but okay. Forget about all that. Forget about all that for a minute.
But that's how laws are composed in.
I know. I know.
Everybody gets to add things, you know.
Well, it's the way they have to do it. That's what Federalist Number 10 is all about.
Well, but the thing is that I won't vote for it unless you give me this, you know. So everybody orders.
Exactly. That's how you get stuff done.
That's how you get things screwed up. That's how you get bridges to nowhere. That's how you get pork.
Hey, okay, hold on a minute. Hey, Money Changer, we'll see you. It was great to see your words. I hope that email gets to me. I'll try to read it on the air. Give me a last-minute chat of what address you sent it to, because I'm not sure which email address you have, and I need to know that to go look. I'll give it a read on the air. I will there, Money Changer. We'll see you. Talk to you next week. Spread the word to your Wall Street friends and all your UPenn buddies. Actually, have a good time. I really wish you would have been there Saturday. Would have loved to seen you. Anyway, how much time do I have left here? 18 minutes. I may have to give it another. Wait a minute. I can't remember which one it is. It's got to be this one. Yep.
Why does
no one call?
Why can't somebody just give somebody me a ring? The stupid telephone is silent like a stone, and I feel all alone. Why
does no one call me? But anyway, we got four lines open here. I know you're out there listening because my listener numbers keep going up every week. So I guess you just want to hear the cult in me go back and forth. But I'm getting 20, 30 listeners a week. So I know you're out there. Maybe I should try. You know, I keep forgetting to send out a Facebook invite.
Yeah, that would be good. Well, why don't let me think. Are you in any clubs or groups on Facebook? Because you can, you know, that's one easy way to.
I'm in the, what do they call that? There's some kind of Buffalo bar group that I'm in.
Okay.
It's one of the first things I did on Facebook. I don't think I've ever done anything else with it. Oh, speaking of jobs.
What's up? Jobs.
Well, no. I used to send out a personal invitation to every one of my friends on Facebook.
Oh, okay.
Through an event. I turned Norm at Night into an event. That was really kind of cool.
That's good.
But what happens is, you know, they block it most places I'm at during the day, and I forget to do it when I'm at home. And the new Facebook, it became much harder to do, at least for me, when they went to the new format that they have. It was much easier to invite people to an event under the old format. Anybody out there got any ideas about Olympia Snow? Why did she do it? And, you know, a really better question, you know, I'm teacher government now, and so talking about the powers of Congress today with the class, and you know, somebody has to is health care a civil right? Is it?
I would say not, but I can see where you could make an argument for it, but I don't think it holds up.
Well, it definitely seems like a right in the Declaration.
Well,
life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Right, exactly. You know.
So when we bring the Constitution, are we throwing out the Declaration?
See, that's the thing. I mean, it would take a very broad interpretation. So if you're guaranteeing me life, well, what then? Yes, then. You know, obviously, but does that mean that every possible form of health care must be available to me? I
don't know. So
I mean,
what has to be available to you? So it's only available to you if you're rich enough to have it?
Well, so far, the only thing that is required by law is that if you show up at a hospital and need treatment, they must treat you. That's the only care you've got. And they must treat you whether you're insured or not, whether you can pay for it or not.
Does the doctor know that when
whether
he's treating you?
No, that's none of his business. That's the administration people.
But do they let him know? Hey, you know, give this guy the least we can because he can't pay.
Right, right. Well, right now, you know, hospitals are very, very stressed, especially emergency rooms. So I told you about the situation we have here with the mental health facility, that big hospital shutting down.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Now,
it's like when Buff State shut down, they let all those chess players out.
Yeah.
What was Owen's last name?
Owen. Yeah, I remember.
Miller?
I remember him.
Was it Miller?
That sounds right. Yeah, something like that.
But he was Thrush's friend, and they let him out on the street. They had him locked up there for years.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the deal, though. These police are bringing these people to these emergency rooms every night. They're in handcuffs. They strap them down on gurneys. And now they don't even have rooms to put them in. They're strapped down in gurneys in hallways for days. If a room shows up, fine. They keep them sedated. That's about all they can do with them.
Right, but here's the problem.
They calm down, they let them back. That's what's going on there now, you know.
My doctor, for instance, my personal physician, he's open from 8 to noon on Monday, Tuesday, and Friday.
Oh, okay. Sounds like my dentist. He's about the same.
Well,
more interested in golf than anything else, you know.
I'm not even going to say that, but if that's all doctors are open, what choice do people have but to go to emergency room? Even if they have insurance.
Well, that's a good question. If I'm injured and I show up at a physician's office, not a hospital, a physician's office, is he required to treat me? I don't know.
If he's open, I suppose he might be.
Yeah, I don't know. So,
you know, actually, when I have called the office, they have always been able to fit me in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might get a 15-minute appointment and then be told, you know, he gives you pills to make you better. I mean, that's essentially all a doctor's appointment's becoming these days. You go there and they write on a piece of paper to take pills.
Well, yeah, then, and you're only getting, what, 5-10 minutes at the most. I mean, it's very quick.
You know, and then he snaps on the glove, vaselines up the finger, and gives you the prostate check.
Oh, well.
That's all I go for.
I'm trying to remember the last. I haven't had that in a long time. And
oh, man. He talks to me about Italian soccer while he scores a goal. Puts it right down the middle. But no, seriously. I have not.
Everything's okay, and if it's okay, then that's it. You know, I mean.
You know, I must be like a health.
I mean, I still got to cough and do all that bullshit. But
I must be like a health insurance company's dream team, because I can't remember the last time I went to the doctor because I was sick.
Yeah, exactly.
I go to the doctor once a year.
Yeah, I think, what was my last one? It's been a while. It's been years, actually.
How often, hey, everybody out there, anybody listening? Somebody give me a call. How often do you go to the doctor? 347-945-6713. Let's see if somebody's in the chat room here. Oh, bye, Norm. Buffnet@Verizon.net. Let me go see if I can get that letter. I got a letter from an email from the money changer. I want to have that on the air, what parts of it I can put on the air. Oh, gosh. Oh, that's when I was reading editorials about Obama's Peace Prize.
Yeah.
Eugene Robinson.
It was a surprise. I heard you were reading an editorial piece. Was that Eugene Robinson or?
Well, it depends.
I read two.
One was an anti and one was a pro. Eugene Robinson was the pro. And that came second.
The one
from the guy in the Jerusalem Times, that was really pretty cool, although he thinks Sharon and Rabin were reasonable winners of the Peace Prize. They were, I don't want to talk about it. I'll get people picketing the front of my house. But,
you know,
all right and wrong, who's right and who's wrong, has just gone out of that whole situation. Now it's just revenge on both sides' parts.
Well, okay, let's say, all right, one of the least controversial recipients, Mother Teresa, right?
Yeah.
Well, we know the humanitarian thing she did, but what did she really do in terms of world peace?
You know, that's.
She held some opinions that weren't exactly, peaceful. I mean.
I know. She was from Romania.
HIV and things. Albania, I think.
I thought it was Romania, but it really doesn't. Yeah. Maybe it was Albania.
Yeah,
health beer clears hurdle with support from snow. Oh, by the way, that's snow with an E.
Snow with an E.
Let me see if I got the money changer's email here. I promised him I'd read it on the air if it's readable. This kid was really smart. He made great simulation games. I guess that's why he's a good money changer.
How come you call him a money changer? I mean,
because he works on Wall Street.
Well, yeah, I understand. So is that a? I don't know. It seems, the biblical.
There's nothing interesting in his email. It's just essentially, sorry, I missed you on Saturday. The other two money change. Oh, these guys. We used to have the greatest arguments in class. There's nothing better than a smart money changer, because then you can really engage with them. And boy, if anything,
oh.
No, no, actually, when you're talking about anything, these, it's when
yeah,
I was
going to
at.
Yeah, they're financial terms, and then, but that can give you,
you know,
a bit of clarity.
It was really
example,
interesting. Go ahead.
I'll give you an example. Schwarzenegger yesterday signed legislation. There will be 5 counties in California, and Sacramento is one of them, that would require installation of an interlock device. That's the breathalyzer to start your car. And it will require that for anybody convicted of a DUI to include first-time offenders. And I think the
I get convicted
like
of a DUI
years.
And they,
the very
they put
first
the thing
time,
in.
You've got to pay to have this thing installed, and it's monitored. It means that you will have to blow into it periodically whenever the alarm, there are people monitoring this thing. You have to pay for the monitoring service while it's on. So it's going to run you $300-$400 to have it put in your car, and then you're going to have to pay between $50 and $100 a month to pay for the monitoring for years after your first conviction.
You know
so,
what the worst part is?
So I look at this piece of legislation. You know, it
right.
seems extreme. And it was sponsored by Mothers Against Drunk Driving. And then I looked to see who's been donating all the money. And certainly, manufacturer of the device, of course. Who else would do it? I mean, and so I read this story, and it's like everyone says, you know, follow the money, right? I followed the money trail. And I got right back to this company, and here they are.
Well, let's hope that not,
you know,
I mean, I could see it eventually being put in every car.
Well, that's actually, that's what they, Mothers Against Drunk Driving wants that. They are the, a lot of people call them neo-prohibitionists.
And I say... God, they're right out of Carry Nation.
Oh, they're even more extreme than that. I mean, you wouldn't believe. If you really look into the organization, a lot of the charity, you know, they may have started as charities, but they're now they're lobbyists. That they'll you know the. Mothers Against Drunk Driving is supportive. You know, they get a lot of money from insurance companies. General Motors and Chrysler are big supporters as well. And let me think here. You know, the other is their fundraising machines. So now when you donate anything to them, something
mm-hmm.
like, I think, over 80% of it is kept within the organization. It stays with them, you know, and pays.
Hey, I got a question for everybody out there in radio land. On this whole topic, maybe we'll make a whole show out of it next week.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should simply raise the driving age and lower the drinking age. Get everybody used to drinking by the time they can drive.
Yeah, well, we don't want to mess with the driving age because all these, you know, low-cost, low-wage teenage workers need to get to McDonald's or wherever else they're working. And if you take their cars away, you take a big chunk of the workforce out of the system.
Well, maybe all those unemployed people can go to work there.
Oh, well, maybe they can. You know, I'm just saying that the kids are willing to work almost any hours and for very low wages. So,
I guess. Well, we got 31 seconds left, and I'm going out of here with Irish coffee. Hey, we'll see you next week. It's been great. And
did you get your taxes done?
my taxes.
I remember you were. Yeah, I thought you were late on your taxes like me.
Oh, late. I owe them thousands. I'm paying it off.
Oh, geez.
I mean, I got everything filed. I just don't have the money to pay them.
Yeah, I'm still working on my. Well, I'm trying to owe as little as possible. Let's say that. I'm coming up with new ideas.
Oh, well, good. Listen, let's talk about all that next week, and there's no point streaming Irish Coffee because the show is on but not streaming. It's been a great night on Norm at Night, and remember, if it's Tuesday, it's Norm at Night. We'll see you next week. I'm a shameless stealer from Timmy Russert, and God rest his soul, and we'll see you all next week. Bye-bye.
Night, Norm.
Good night. And Norm at Night is out of here just as soon as I can get the Skype up to end the phone call. And let's see this.